sit right back, then you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip.
In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain!
Shot, Stan. You blew that beagle into billions of bits today.
Well, thank you, John. But actually, we're going to talk about a time today in which the beagle did pretty well. I am Stan Hudson.
I'm John Krolinski. We'd like to welcome you to another exciting, information-filled episode of
Sink the Beagle. A very lighthearted look at serious issues on creation and evolution. Lighthearted because light hearts go with light heads, and that's the way we approach life. No, actually serious things like this. And today, John, it's part two of a two-parter.
Maybe a two-parter here on a very famous trial we picked up, often referred to as the Scopes Monkey Trial.
1925, Dayton, Tennessee, in the Rhea County Courthouse, where John Scopes was supposedly dragged in before the mean-hearted, cruel creationists and,
being lynched for teaching creation in
public. How dare he? Yes.
Teaching evolution in public schools to those lovely creationist children.
This historical trial was captured, supposedly the spirit of it, captured in Hollywood's vision of it in the famous movie called Inherit the Wind. And both the trial and the movie, it'd be fair to say in my little comment about the beagle doing a little better at times, these two events did an awful lot for the cause of evolution in American society and certainly in public schools.
And if you don't believe us, go check your children's, your high school children's biology textbooks. I checked my daughter's, and the only theory of origins taught in high school biology, public school books, secular books, is the theory of evolution. There is nothing said about creation. And they hold up these icons. They even reference this trial as a significant turning point in all these stories. And it truly was.
American literature classes, American history classes will sometimes bring in the video Inherit the Wind, and we'll talk about this trial.
Or the playwright.
Or the play or other things. And so this is a key event. Okay, now last week, John, last week.
We set the stage.
We set the stage, and the trial is begun. And here are these big-time lawyers from New York. The ACLU is there with its big guns, and Clarence Darrow is leading the attack against the fundamental creationists and their silly law that has tried to keep John Scopes from teaching the truth that man was descended from apes.
But it wasn't just the defense who had its heavyweights. The the prosecutors had Williams Jennings Bryant, a former Secretary of State, a three-time presidential aspirant on their side.
Yes.
And then there were many, many others who were also brought in. This just list, notice the list of some of the people that were heavyweights at this trial. It says, you know, a worldwide audience was following, as we mentioned last week, over 65 people typing out on international telegraphs the results, the day-by-day, blow-by-blow aspects of this trial.
1925. This was as good as it gets.
Yeah.
Newsreels and everything was going on.
Everybody. Over 200 reporters covering the event. It was just phenomenal. People like George Bernard Shaw, Edgar Lee Masters, and even Albert Einstein were called in to give testimony.
Yeah, they were watching and seeing what was going on. You bet.
And so you can just see the magnitude. I mean, you're calling in Einstein, you're calling in some serious names to testify in this case.
Now, you remember, listeners, if you were listening last week, this trial came about in a desire to bring attention to Dayton, Tennessee, to bring in a little PR, a little business.
It brought in business.
It brought in so many big names. The top two lawyers of the day were Clarence Darrow and William Jennings Bryan, and this was going to be a battle of the heavyweights to determine once and for all the truth of the Bible and should it be taught in public school.
But the defense wasn't also lacking. They had some people. The prosecutors weren't lacking. Yeah. They had Arthur Garfield Hayes. They also had speeches by Attorney General A.T. Stewart, William Jennings Bryant Jr., and even Sue K. Hicks.
Sue K. Hicks. Now, who is Sue Hicks?
No, it's not she. It's a he.
You fell for it. You see, you thought Sue is She. Sue is a he.
Sue is a he. It's the original Boy Named Sue, sung by Johnny Cash, made famous by Johnny Cash.
And actually, we're not kidding. It is the Boy Named Sue of Johnny Cash. Okay, just a little extra there.
Yeah, a little extra so you know where that song comes from now. You can figure it out why a boy would ever be named Sue. We don't know.
Now, two schoolboys, Howard Morgan and Harry Shelton, also were asked to be ready to be on the witness stand, and they were coached as to what to say about this teacher that he did indeed teach evolution, even though he hadn't.
He hadn't. The whole town was staged for this event. Everything was staged. The only thing that was real about it was the ACL's desire to defend evolution and the right to teach it and take down, if possible, the character and the name of William Jennings Bryan.
Yes.
Those are the main two causes behind it, because he was a powerful force in American politics. Matter of fact, you know, just a side note, William Jennings Bryan is responsible, and most people be mad at this, but he is the one who introduced the income tax, folks.
Oh, well, now he just dropped a little bit in my stocks.
He dropped anyway. But he also was involved in women's suffrage. He led the bill that led to Women's Suffrage Act.
And if you look at it, he was a Democrat, a Southern Democrat, and you know, he actually was fairly progressive for his day. And when we're talking about this law that he was asked to support, the Butler Act, which says you can't teach in our public schools, that man descended from apes, he was actually sympathetic so much to the effect that he said, and if a teacher's get a fine in this act, we'll cover it. We'll pay for it.
I'll pay out of my own pocket.
And no jail time, please. So, you know, opposite of inherit the wind.
Opposite. And the one thing that is, though, when you see William Jennings Bryan, character, you don't see a person. He see a very godly man in so many ways, and a very biblically based person. And what they really did, Darryl really tried to sabotage Bryan, and more importantly, I believe, the view of creation and the Bible as a source of authority and revelation as a source of authority in our culture today.
Clarence Darrow was an agnostic. He was not a believer. And William Jennings Bryan was the most famous fundamentalist of the day. So this was quite a scene.
And it's had quite a few tactics Darrow started to employ. Notice some of the things that he might have said.
Some of the questions he brought out. Now, they agreed. Now, this is a really interesting tactic between Darrow and Bryan. They both agreed to take the witness stand for the other each one to be cross-examined by the other.
Yeah. And the lawyers cross-examined each other.
They weren't on trial.
They weren't even on trial.
Yeah. It had nothing to do with them. But anyway, they were sort of experts for the opposite, and they agreed to have for their moment in the sun. And Darrow got Bryan to agree to go first. So Bryan is on the stand. Mistake, tactical mistake. And he put him on the spot, and he asked him questions about the Bible. He asked him questions like this. Did the snake walk on his tail before God cursed him to crawl? Where did Cain get his wife? How old is the earth? How many people were there in Egypt and China 3,500 years ago? And Bryan's replies were a mixture of Bible knowledge, you know, retorts, and the times when he didn't know, he said he didn't know, but he was trying to, you know, Darrow was trying to trap him. And he finally, in my opinion, and the opinion of many scholars looking at this, rather did finally trap him when the subject of a 24-hour literal day came up in the time of creation.
Because William Jennings Bryan wasn't a believer necessarily in short age.
He was not a literal six-day creationist.
No, he did not like the idea, though, of teaching the man, a dignified creature as man, ever evolve from something as foolish as monkeys or apes. And that is the part of the law he believed in passionately.
And many creationists today are kind of in that same dichotomy, John. They want to believe the Bible being reasonably accurate, but they want to believe in science too. And so where they make that divide often is, well, I believe that God created and there may be long age, but boy, I have a hard time believing we came from monkeys. So they kind of draw the line there, just like Bryan did.
Having all these heavyweights there and the trial beginning sort of with a bang, it kind of dragged on for a while and ended with a lot of summer heat. It ended kind of in a whimper. Matter of fact, it got so hot that when the action was getting quite interesting, there was only like six reporters in the whole room of the 200. All the rest were scattering for shade, and that even Scopes, the defendant in the trial, was busy taking notes for reporters because they all wanted to go find a cool place to hang out.
Hey, listen, can you, Mr. Scopes, you cover it for us. We're going to go take a break.
It's like OJ taking notes for his... on his case for reporters because they don't want to hang out in the courtroom. It wasn't exciting enough or too hot out.
Well, you say it ended with a whimper, and how did it end?
Well, actually, it ended quite surprisingly. After Bryant was somewhat humiliated in the stand, not terribly, but somewhat humiliated in the stand,
yes.
All of a sudden, Darrow pulled a tactic and just declared his defendant guilty as charged.
Yes.
And therefore, because Darrow had an ulterior motive, he wanted to actually take it to the Court of Appeals where it could be discussed on much more philosophical issues. That's where he wanted to go with
well,
the
earlier,
case.
Well, earlier,
they would appeal it.
They brought a lot of experts to testify for long age and in evolution and everything, and they weren't allowed because it wasn't pertinent. The issue was really whether Mr. Scopes had broken the law.
Yeah.
And that was really the issue. And so it kind of limited him. So he made this tactic, you know, I'm going to get it up to a higher a court anyway. Might as well wind this up. And I sure don't want to put myself on the hot seat.
And let William Jennings Bryan,
who's
a famous
me.
Orator, go after me and share what he really thinks about life and everything,
yes,
too.
Yes.
And that was a very tactical thing. It kind of left Bryan just hanging there.
Yes.
He was the one who was hanging in the wind, so to speak, over mm-hmm. All the difficulties. And so
July 21, Scopes was found guilty. And the $100 fine was assessed on him. And
later that was reversed. And
yeah.
On a conviction on the technicality that the jury, not the judge, should have set the fine.
Yeah, that's a real technicality.
And so later on, you know, the irony is that William Jennings Bryant was warned. He had a bad heart and all mm-hmm. these other problems, but he had already prepared a 1,500-word monologue, which he never got to deliver. I mean, that's quite a few words there. Mm-hmm. A 1,500-word monologue, which
no,
he was going to... No, 15,000, excuse me.
1,000-word monologue. I mean, we have 1,500, yeah, all the time. But no, 15,000, a
words.
Big old long document, and he was never able to deliver it. He had it published, though.
He had it published, and he ended up dying of a heart attack shortly after this trial.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite interesting, though, but I'd like to just share and read a little bit.
Okay.
If you would like to do that, or me, whoever.
Yeah, why don't you?
I've just noticed what kind of orator Bryant was, though, and why I think in some respects evolutionists were and maybe had good reason to
the
be
fear,
afraid
yes.
a man like this.
Mm-hmm.
Here's just a minute or two of this retort that he was going to make, and he begins by quoting the psalmist asked Jehovah, "What is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou visitest him?" And answering his own question, he adds, "For thou hast made him a little lower than the angels and hast crowned him with glory and honor." Having quoted that passage, here's Bryant's oratory. He says, "Man, in the sense in which the term describes the human being to whom the Creator has given dominion over the earth and the air and the sea, and upon whom he has imposed responsibilities commensurate with the capabilities and possibilities, man, as thus defined, is an appropriate theme for an occasion like this, and its consideration is worthy not only for those who, having completed the course of study prescribed by this institution, go forth to meet life's problems, but worthy also of the thought of those who are older. Miracle of miracles, man, most hopeless of all, of God's creatures in infancy, most powerful when fully developed, and interesting always. What unfathomed possibilities are wrapped within the swaddling clothes of that enfold an infant? Who can measure a child's influence for weal or woe? Before it can lisp a word, it has brought to one woman the sweet consciousness of motherhood. It has given to one man the added strength that comes with a sense of responsibility. Before its tiny hands can lift a feather's weight, they have drawn two hearts closer together, and its innocence prattles echoes through two lives. Every day a child is growth touches and changes someone, not in a year and all its history, but it leaves an impress upon the race. What incalculable space between a statue, however flawless the marble, however faultless the workmanship, and a human being aflame with the passion of eternity." And he goes on and on and on. But what an orator. He's powerful writing, you know.
Yes, yes.
Language is lost.
And you know what, John? What I really am sad about in this trial, Darrow never took the stand.
Yeah.
And to this day, evolutionists have not had to defend themselves as the creationists did in this courtroom. And now they get complete freedom. They are in the classroom. That's all they hear.
They don't get complete freedom. They're going to have to start defending against people like you and me.
That's it. That's
we're putting torpedoes in that bow. We're going to put them on trial.
I like that.
And we'll hold their feet to the fire here on Sink the Beagle.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. We'd like to send you a special gift just for being with us today. Write to our email address, beagle@lifetalk.net, and ask for your free copy of Dr. Dwight Nelson's book called Built to Last, A Thoughtful Look at Creation and Evolution. Ask for Built to Last when you write to beagle@lifetalk.net. And be sure to listen in next time for Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friends. You're sure to get a smile from Seven Stranded Castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.